Welcome to Alternative Realities. I'm Aaron Mulvihill, Global Market Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. It's been a volatile month in the markets as investors process the impact of tariffs on the economy, and one that certainly reminds us of the value of being diversified across public as well as private markets. Private market investments have historically been limited to institutions like pension funds and insurance companies, but that's changing, with more investment options becoming available for individual investors like you and me, with more liquidity and lower minimums. Joining me today to talk about this evolution in alternative investing is Jed Laskowitz, Global Head of Private Markets and Customized Solutions for JP Morgan Asset Management. Jed has held leadership roles across the business during his nearly 30 years at the firm, so I'm excited to hear his thoughts on the market today and where we're heading to in the future. We'll talk about how alternatives are helping clients in the current volatile market environment, but we'll also zoom out to the bigger picture, the growth of alternatives investing, increasing accessibility for individual investors, and other trends in the industry. So let's get started. Jed, thank you for joining us today on Alternative Realities.
Great to be here.
So we're speaking at the end of a very long week of historic market volatility in public markets. I know you've had a very busy week talking with clients and helping them to navigate through this period of uncertainty. I'd love to hear more about what those conversations were like. But first, just to give our viewers and listeners some background on yourself, would you mind walking us through your career path and what brought you here to JP Morgan and your role here today?
Yeah, after a very long week, it is important to have a long-term perspective. I've definitely gotten to do that at JP Morgan. So this is my 29th year at the firm. I've spent my entire career in the asset management business. I've had opportunity to live in other parts of the world. I spent 3 years in Hong Kong running our asset management business in Asia Pacific, 8 countries, an incredible business across Asia. And the last 10 years in New York, running our multi-asset class platform, and more recently, our private markets business. So I feel like I've had a front row seat to the development, growth, and diversity of this incredible investment organization. When I joined the firm in 1996, we had roughly $350 billion of assets under management. Today, we sit at over $3.5 trillion. And I've been really fortunate to be part of many aspects of that over the last almost 3 decades. I can't even believe I'm saying that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've had a fantastic vantage point, right, to see both the growth of the firm, but also the growth of JP Morgan in alternative investing and how the industry has evolved. From your perspective and from that vantage point, how have you seen the alternative business change and grow?
Yeah, it's grown a lot. And I think that when I think about when I started here and the history of our private markets business, it really started with real estate. We were a core U.S. real estate manager, mainly for U.S. pension. And over the next 20, 30 years, we've turned into a globally diversified alternatives platform. Beginning with the growth of our real asset platform and infrastructure and transportation, the growth of our special situations platform, more recently, private capital. In 2021, we acquired Campbell Global Forestry Manager. So, we started in the real estate space and since then have built an incredibly well-diversified set of solutions. And when I think about that and the advantages of that, it's that our perspective cuts across so many different things: equity, debt, public, private, obviously different sectors of the private markets, which really allows us to engage with investors, investments that we make, companies that we talk to, clients, obviously, that we work with and advise on so many different dimensions around the problems they're trying to solve. Whether it's diversification, return seeking, risk, being more opportunistic, being more defensive. And, Aaron, you started with, the environment. We're in an environment we haven't seen for some time. It's been a historic run in risk assets. And now we're at a period of time where there's a degree of, I think it's a bit of a combination of certainty and uncertainty. around what to expect from tariffs, what to expect from economic growth, and maybe a different regime here about the way investors need to think about both finding diversification and defense, because we've been in an environment where bonds really haven't protected over the, since 2021. We've had a little bit of that negative correlation back, but back to kind of your point about more recent stressed markets, bonds haven't been providing that negative correlation. So, we're in an interesting kind of regime shift here. But as I mentioned at the onset, having that long-term perspective is incredibly important.
Yeah, and certainly in terms of those correlations, having an extra defender in the portfolio, uncorrelated assets like infrastructure and so on have been adding some benefits.
These aren't necessarily new concepts. I think institutional investors have been thinking about the importance of parts of the alternatives market like infra, for a long time for their inflation protection, for low correlation, low volatility. I think increasingly we're seeing individual investors want to access that part of the market exactly for those characteristics.
Yeah. I'd love to explore a bit of that with you in terms of what you're hearing from clients and how they're using alternatives in this environment. What are you hearing from clients as you're having those conversations over the past weeks and indeed the past months? Because the volatility is not a new thing over the past weeks. We've kind of gotten used to it over the last couple of years, it seems.
Yeah. Alternatives are becoming more accessible across different parts of the market. Some of that are the vehicles that these strategies are available in, whether it's a private fund or a registered fund or other vehicles that allow access at lower minimums, offering more liquidity. So I think overall, we're seeing investors looking for different ways to put protection in their portfolio through the use of private markets. Huge growth in the credit markets, significant growth in different parts of the private equity market, real estate, infra, as we've talked about. So, I think it's kind of the kind of traditional asset allocation kind of thinking, which is, what role do I want this allocation to play in my portfolio? Is it return seeking? Is it diversifying? What is the interplay with the public part of my portfolio? And we're clearly seeing allocation to alternatives, go up. This has been a phenomenon that has been going on for a long period of time in the institutional segment. And it's, gaining steam in the wealth segment. And that's a global phenomenon, so to speak. But I do think it's important, risk management in private markets, I think, is so incredibly important. It's important in public markets and private markets, but it's particularly important in private markets because of that illiquidity of the assets that you're investing in. And these tend to be longer term strategies that have lockups, strategies that don't offer daily liquidity, or even maybe sometimes annual liquidity. So really understanding the risk you're taking going into the investment and understanding the role that it's going to play is incredibly important.
Yeah. And you touched on an important point here in terms of the various asset classes that are out there and different dynamics. One of the trends we've seen and continue to see is investors not just allocating and diversifying with alternatives, but also within different alternatives asset classes. Is this something you hear about in conversation with clients and a trend that you see?
Yeah, I think it is. And I'll give you a good example. We publish JP Morgan's long-term capital markets assumptions. And these are, return and risk and correlation assumptions for virtually every asset class, around the world. And we came into the year with, our view, and these are forward-looking returns, business cycle neutral returns for various asset classes. And this year's assumptions, we came in with the view that some of the best return opportunities were going to come from real estate, both core and opportunistic. And part of the driver behind that is, first, real estate in many segments has sold off 20, 30, 40, or even 50%. So you've already seen a bit of a reset in valuations. You know, second, there are themes that are going on across, you know, particularly the US, you know, housing shortage, continued need for industrial outdoor storage, you can't, you know, drive around the block without seeing an Amazon truck. You know, you need somewhere to go to repair that truck, for that truck to pick up the goods. So playing into this theme of the continued growth of e-commerce, there's all these kind of trends happening in the real estate market. And at the same time, you're in an environment where office has sold off so much. And as economic conditions, you know, potentially begin to weaken here, it's our view that there are going to be a lot more people coming to the office 5 days a week. As you know, we're all back 5 days a week, 5 days a week for quite some time. So, you know, all of these themes lead into this idea that, listen, real estate has sold off a lot. Our view on forward-looking returns for U.S. real estate, we think you're going to get, you know, core plus or opportunistic-like returns from core assets. And if you go back to the global financial crisis, or even further back to the savings and loan crisis, those were all periods where we saw historic moves in real estate prices, but incredible returns over the next decade, you know, 10 to 15 years. And we think we're at one of those periods again for real estate.
And these are secular trends that are quite separate from what's happening in
And I think
it's tariffs.
Absolutely. These are secular trends. You know, they offer embedded inflation protection. The other thing that I might, you know, key on, and because we're in the diversifier segment here, is infrastructure. And these themes of increased power demand, and this is not just about AI, it's about the electronification of basically everything. This idea that countries around the world need energy security. And that was obviously a very important theme when the war in Ukraine started, and it continues to be an important theme. And you know, Europe having energy, you know, energy independence, and the energy transition, which really isn't a political issue; it's a necessity to meet energy demand. We need new forms of energy. So. As we think about investment opportunities in infrastructure, these are all very stable, very predictable, very long-term themes that are not necessarily as impacted as directly as the public markets.
Right. Uncorrelated sort of domestic industries and domestic power and utility consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we think about, you know, how alternatives are expanding from being institutional investments, pension funds, insurance companies, and now gaining wider accessibility. You know, one question I have is, and maybe you can shed some light on this from your perspective, is why is it taking so long for this to happen?
Yeah, I don't know if it's taken so long. I do think that there has been an evolution in. I think the number of high quality asset managers entering this space. So I actually think that that's probably one of the newer phenomenons. I mean, there were what I would call kind of retail oriented alternatives going back 20 years ago. And I was involved in the segment back then. I think if I think about, you know, products then versus now, I think it's a much more institutional quality strategy in the wealth segment, which I think is really important. I do think that the development of structure is making it easier for individual investors to access these strategies, whether it's business development companies or interval funds or tender offer funds, different vehicles for different investor qualifications that make sense for them, that make it kind of easier for them to transact in and understand. And I think for the most part, fees have come down. I mean, fees typically don't go up over decades. They tend to come down. You know, you should get more efficient. You should pass on those economies of scale to, you know, to investors. So I think it's a higher quality market. And I think that's what's developed over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. But I also think that it's really important not to lose sight of the fact that manager selection within private markets, the spread between a top quartile manager and a bottom quartile manager will be wider than public markets. And that's why understanding the fee structure, understanding the liquidity, understanding the objectives of the strategy, and really being thorough as it relates to due diligence before committing capital is incredibly important. Because one of the nuances of the wealth segment, some of these strategies have to offer more liquidity than maybe a private fund. So that does mean you're giving up some return in that liquidity premium. So I think those are all things to really, you know, really understand as an investor.
Mm-hmm. And are there, as the market kind of evolves and becomes more accessible, and you pointed out the scale, right? It's almost a $20 trillion market, and maybe that's what's allowing the institutional grade assets to be being made accessible by ordinary investors or individual investors. Are there lessons to be learned from the experience of institutional investors over this time that maybe an individual should keep in mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to risk management. And I think really understanding how an asset manager, you know, regardless of the segment of alternatives, and as you know, as we say, we say alternatives as one thing, but it's so many different things. It's real estate, infra, hedge funds, private equity, credit, partially across so many different things. But for the most part, you know, this whole notion that risk management is so important, particularly in something that is less liquid, because everything's fine until it's not. So you really want to have a manager that's been through a difficult period, you know, has been through a financial crisis, that has managed through one of these periods. So you can actually see what they've done, how they've managed through those periods, how they've handled liquidity, you know, and their investors. And, you know, again, with private markets, these are long-term relationships because of the, you know, liquidity. So you're connected with that firm, that fund, that manager for potentially a longer period of time than an ETF or a fund that you could decide to sell and do so on a daily basis. So developing those relationships, developing that understanding, I think is important. And I would say that's a best practice with institutions. And then sizing. I mean, listen, I think obviously giving up liquidity for the most part is not a comfortable thing. I think an institution that has a longer time horizon has more comfort in doing that. Most individuals could probably give up more liquidity than they do because it's just not an intuitively comfortable thing. So I do think that really understanding what that tolerance is and I do think there's a lot to add in terms of a return premium for that illiquidity. So it's really understanding where those boundaries are, what illiquidity a client's willing to give up, and then leveraging the investments to create better returns and better diversification in portfolios.
Yeah, and when you say that, I think about, you know, my retirement and 401k plan. You know, I don't touch the 401k. Hopefully, for the next 20 or 30 years, there is some liquidity to be given away there in return for higher yield. And maybe if we just dig into that, how far do you see this trend going in terms of democratization? Do you see alternatives being part of retirement plans or 401k plans into the future?
So you know, we have, you know, truly been an innovator in that space. So we've had direct real estate in our smart retirement funds, our target date series, for almost 20 years. You know, we're big believers in alternatives and in defined contribution. They've been a function of pension plans for many, many years, and I think that there, you know, are developments underway on the regulatory front to make that easier for plan sponsors to be able to offer options for private markets in DC. But I also think, again, back to the, you know, do it responsibly. And I know that sounds obvious, but it is really important because most individuals aren't going to understand how to allocate and the best way to size. An allocation, or what should my mix between equity and credit and real assets be? So I think making sure we're doing it professionally, putting portfolios together, I think there's a lot of opportunity to do that responsibly in the retirement space. And we've seen the benefits of having real estate in our portfolios, you know, over the course of time with our target date series. And I think that's something that should be easier, because you're right, Aaron. I mean, I wish I had been able to put, you know, private equity in my retirement portfolio, but I come at it through a different lens. You come at it through a different lens. So I think about it in terms of the individual that's not in our industry. So we have to make sure if we do that, and we open that up, how do we do it in a way that people really understand it and it provides a benefit?
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. And it, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about if I had real estate in my portfolio as I joined the industry in 2010, as we were coming out of the financial crisis, I think I'd be pretty happy with what I saw in my 401k today. And so just as we close out here, Jed, what are some trends or investment themes that you're particularly excited about right now?
Yeah, I think we talked about a few of them. You know, we talked about real estate and infrastructure. I would say more on the return seeking side of the equation. You know, private equity is a space that has offered, you know, fantastic opportunities. Some of the largest, most innovative companies in the world today were private at one point. Some of the largest public companies in the world were private at one point. And you know, private equity, if you go back to 2024, you know, given some of the pressure in the kind of the overall deal market, you know, it's been a difficult period for M&A. You know, I kind of like, you know, we sort of joke that the M&A market has been is 6 months away from a recovery for 3 years. So that's not good for the private equity market, because for investors to get returns, those companies that they own in those portfolios need to continue to kind of do deals or sell or continue to create what's called realizations, you know, in those funds. Now, the flip side of that is valuations in private equity have actually been better than public markets. So when you look at 2024, a later stage round, so think a company doing like a series, you know, D or a series E, kind of their fourth or fifth time going back to raise money, about 60% of those rounds were what called down rounds, which were, they were raising money at lower valuations than the earlier stage rounds. Early stage round down rounds were around 10 or 20%. So the spread between early and later stage, that's the widest you've seen in a decade. So what that means is good opportunity to get high growth companies at more reasonable prices, and in some ways more reasonable than valuations for growth in the public markets. Now, so I think for fresh capital, there's a lot of opportunity in across private equity in venture growth, technology, life sciences. And then the other side of that is who's lending to these companies. Now, when there aren't deals getting done, you know, these companies need to borrow, and you know, rates are still high. You know, 10-year, you know, today I think is at 4.5. I'm not sure where it's going to be when this airs. Hopefully, maybe a little bit lower. But when you think about, you know, stressed and credit, and not what I would say kind of, you know, what I would call kind of corporate direct lending, but more, I would say, not quite distressed, but you know, more kind of stressed credit, opportunities to lend into that environment, we think are going to be significant. When companies can't do those types of deals, or sponsors can't do those types of deals, they launch continuation funds to actually kind of go through the normal kind of harvest period. So we see lots of opportunities to kind of lend into the private credit space through what are typically called special situations.
Those high interest rates have been a challenge for a lot of the companies borrowing money, but that's creating some opportunities for the distressed lenders.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Jed, thank you so much for joining me on Alternative Realities.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. I look forward to being back.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed by J.P. Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.